Hello and welcome to this week's Corporate Buzz, where we'll be talking about the top news from India Inc. this week. I'm your host Kirtana Tiwari and I have Prince Thomas with me, Moneycontrol's Corporate Bureau Chief. Hi Prince, welcome to the show.
Hi Kirtana, thank you so much.
Prince, this week we saw that Toyota Motor Corp, they announced that it won't be expanding further in India due to high tax regime. Can you describe more about this and what's behind it?
So Toyota did say that, you know, the message that it is getting from the authorities is that it's not wanted in the country. And it specifically said so because it said that the taxes are very high. So basically taking the rationale that if the taxes are very high for auto products, that means the government is probably not giving the sector its due. So that's how the whole rationale was built up. It did get the attention of everyone. In fact, I think it was also even, taken up later in the day by the minister. So, but the real thing here is to understand if the high taxes are the only reason for Toyota's not so great performance in India, because it's been in India since, 97. But still it has a very minimal share of the market. Is that just because of the high taxes? One would really question that, because the taxes are same for everyone else. And if you compare Toyota's performance with even the relative newcomers, I think Toyota kind of doesn't fare well. So while it may be true that the taxes are very high, for instance, you know, for taxes on SUVs are about 28%. And this doesn't include the other tax, which is depending on the vehicle type. And that could be another 22% at the top deck. So in total, the taxes in India could be high as almost 50%, which is very, very high. Mm-hmm. But this is a reality that everyone faces. So why only Toyota is talking about it?
Okay. And what has been the government response to this? Because I read that there are some claims from them saying that GST rates are actually less than what VAT and excise duty used to be in pre-GST times. Is that true?
Yeah, that could be right. Because the whole rationale of GST was to simplify the whole tax structure. Mm-hmm. And to make the whole complexity of the taxation in India into a more simplified nature. But still, one could say that, you know, taxes, depending on the kind of vehicle that they're looking at. Because, for instance, even for two-wheelers, the taxes are pretty high. And I think even the finance minister recently talked about that GST rates would be brought down for two-wheelers. Though that hasn't happened yet. But industry players have supported that move, and I think they're actually disappointed that actual announcement hasn't come till now, because that will make a huge difference in the savings for a customer. I think the saving could be as high as 15,000 rupees when you buy a bike. So GST has simplified, but still there are specific cases where the taxes are still high.
Mm-hmm. So, in the past, we've also seen that General Motors and Ford Motors have moved from India, but apparently it was a gradual move. Why did they leave?
It's always been a function of them not doing very well. With General Motors, I think there were a lot of, both General Motors and Ford, they had probably a couple of products that did very well. But then they couldn't keep pace with, one, the competition and the changing taste of the consumers in India. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we don't know the exact reason, but is it because internationally as a parent also they had a lot of reorganization, some acquisition, sale of assets, change in, you know, there were problems at the parent level. Did that have an impact on India? Probably they didn't see India as a very big market for them. So the kind of pipeline they had of products didn't match up to the likes of Maruti or Hyundai. And that's why probably they took the call saying that they won't. But some of them continue to keep producing from India and selling it in the international market and using India as an export region. But even the case of Toyota, I think it's the same case, because Toyota as of now has about 8 models in India, and which is not something that a 23-year-old player should be having. It should be having surely more than that. especially if you look at the compare its performance with Kia, which just came in last year, and it has three models and already has a market share which is higher than Toyota. So surely players who have come and gone out, probably the reason is that they're not being able to understand the market and their models haven't done very well. But that hasn't stopped many other players from coming, you know, especially look at Kia, MG Motors, and some of the others continue to do well, like Hyundai, Volkswagen continues to be there, Honda is continues to be a big player. So there are success stories, but there are also not so very success stories also.
But Prince, don't you think that the Indian market has, you know, scope for some variety where people can explore more? And do you think that India is welcoming in that sense, that, you know, welcoming to foreign auto manufacturers?
Yeah, I think, for instance, if you see the kind of launches we have had last 1 year or even this year, as we speak, the Sonet has been launched. So especially in the SUV segment, if you see the there are a lot many more options than you can have. You could have had in the probably 2 years or 3 years ago. At the same time, we need to understand our market is a little different from, say, a market in Europe or China or even in or the US, because our needs are different. While US, you have the bigger vehicles. In India, you have the smaller vehicles. We look at mileage. We are still very price sensitive. So looking at these realities, so the companies, they come here and they try to customize their products or they create a new platform. And many of these companies, look at Hyundai. Hyundai has been very successful in doing that, about how it has customized its products in India. Same case with Suzuki. So there are examples of companies, international companies, who have done exceedingly well in India. So it depends upon how you have really understood the market. Surely we may not have as many options like what you see internationally in the developed markets, but I think companies are launching more and more products now. Even Tata Motors, which was, you know, earlier, you know, the one criticism against the company was that it was not launching enough models. But now that is also, even Tata Motors has become aggressive on that. It is also coming regularly with new models. Mm-hmm. So you will see more and more models coming out for sure.
Okay. What about the electric and hybrid vehicles? Like I mentioned before, the government, they have given certain concessions for those kind of vehicles. Won't that open up more opportunities for such brands?
The problem, the whole awareness about electric vehicles has immensely increased.
Right.
You know, and especially among the younger buyers, you will see that they really consider as electric vehicles as an option. But there are twin problems here. One is that electric vehicles are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have discussed on Corporate Buzz itself earlier that the price point is a sensitive thing for Indian customers. And electric vehicles functionally are more expensive, much more. Right. So that is one problem. And why electric cars haven't sold in India as much as they could have done. And second, the whole infrastructure about battery and charging systems. So that's why even recently, I think Manikantol did a story about why Volkswagen is actually saying that it doesn't want to sell electric vehicles in India.
Okay.
Because of these two reasons. So we will have to, one, price have to go down, and second, India as a country will need to have a better battery charging infrastructure for people to start getting comfortable to start to buy electric vehicles.
Right, we could go on and on and talking about this, and hopefully we get more opportunity in the coming episodes.
Sure.
Let's move on to the next topic, Prince. Tomorrow IPL is starting, and it's going to be interesting to see how this year IPL is going to happen. There are reports that suggest that Star India, the official broadcaster, hasn't cut ad rates despite the impact of COVID-19.
Yeah.
Can you explain how this is going to work out for them?
In fact, Kirtna, they have actually increased, the ad rates have increased by 10% from last year.
Mm-hmm.
So what they used to do is they sell 80% of the ad slots before itself, they book it. It's like an advance booking. And the rest of the 20% is sold closer to the tournament.
Okay.
We see that the rates have actually increased 10% by 10% compared to last year. And that's probably the reason because, you know, IPL is probably the one big thing that has come about in the whole calendar year. You know, for 3-4, almost now 6 months, we've been under the effect of COVID-19 and the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the ad spend, companies had reduced the ad spend dramatically. And that was across. But IPL has brought in that opportunity for them to advertise again.
Mm-hmm.
And one should also remember, this is also the festival season. So it's very, very, and IPL usually doesn't happen during this time of the year. It's during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually has worked well for IPL because the companies will lap it up as an opportunity to advertise during the festival season. And that's the perfect platform because we know the kind of views that IPL matches get both on TV and the OTT. So that's a huge opportunity for them and that's why Star has been able to get higher rates.
Mm-hmm. And how would the sporting event as a whole do without an audience? Because if I remember correctly, that most of the revenue comes from the ticket sales, right?
A considerable part would come from the ticket sales, but I would still think that the advertising would bring them more money.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes the on-ground advertising and then what happens on the air. Surely some bit of the color drama would be, you know, absent when these matches happen without spectators.
Right.
Because, you know, the whole part of the buzz and the atmosphere was the presence of spectators when matches happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that may impact, but I think cricket lovers have been bereft of cricket for the last 6-7 months. You know, there absolutely has been no action at all.
Yeah, definitely.
And though some matches have started happening in England, where I think they played against Pakistan and now Australia,
mm-hmm.
But the Indian team and Indian players have not been on the field for more than 6 months now. So we will surely see a lot of interest. I think on Saturday, I think many people will be glued on their TVs or, you know, their phone screens, including me.
Sure. Prince, moving on to the aviation sector.
Mm-hmm.
This week we saw that the Rajya Sabha had passed the Aircraft Amendment Act. Can you describe this and who would benefit from it?
Yeah, actually the amendment and this act is pretty old. It was initially came in 1934.
Mm-hmm.
Now the amendment which has been in the making for at least the last 3-4 years and it was already been passed in Lok Sabha and this was what Rajya Sabha just cleared it.
Okay.
What it basically means is to give some more teeth to the some of the agencies that come under Ministry of Civil Aviation.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes the aviation regulator, the DGCA, then a body which investigates aircraft crash. So basically it gives these agencies the right to penalize airlines, airports, or even probably passengers or pilots or engineers in case they are, you know, found to have committed an error. Now, this right to penalize airlines was not there till now.
Okay.
And that would probably help the aviation regulator, the DGCA,
mm-hmm.
to be more stricter. And probably this will also act as a deterrent for the airlines also. Because they would want to, you know, one crore may not sound like a huge amount, but for at a time when airlines want to save even, you know, even one paisa, I think this will be a deterrent for airlines to ensure that their processes and systems are in place. And specifically important because, you know, we just saw a crash in Kozhikode. While the investigation is still on, there surely has to be some problem between the system and the processes. We don't know, maybe at the airline or the airport, what went wrong. So probably with DGC and the other agencies having powers to penalize airlines, little more, you know, focus would come onto safety because safety is very important in aviation.
Right.
And till now the DGCA could only suspend an airline, you know, suspend or cancel the license of an airline or suspend the pilot or an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the ideal punishment for each error. You know, you can't cancel an aircraft airline's license for a much lesser error. So this surely gives these agencies much more teeth. And the problem, though, could be that, you know, the amendment also gives the overarching power to the government.
Mm-hmm.
So one intention was that these bodies would become more autonomous. But the safety experts and industry observers always say that if the government is going to have more control over these agencies, then the government can even ask these agencies to change and alter their judgments.
Okay.
So this is a question mark. But still, it is an important kind of a development to ensure that also India improves on the safety parameter.
Mm-hmm.
Because internationally, there's an organization called ICAO, which actually grades countries in terms of their safety when it comes to aviation sector. Mm-hmm. And India was actually ranked even below Pakistan.
Okay.
So this would be one area that will improve India's ranking for sure.
Okay. And while we're speaking about safety, DGCA has also begun a special safety audit for Indigo and Vistara flights. Can you explain this and what exactly is this for?
So this actually the DGCA has been prompted to do this after the Air India Express crash in Kozhikode in August.
Mm-hmm.
And it is doing audit for all airlines. I think it has already done so for Air India and SpiceJet, and now it's doing for Indigo and Vistara.
Okay.
It will be doing so for each and every airline because for sure there was some shortcomings that could have led to the crash.
Mm-hmm.
And the DGCA would be, you know, ensuring that all the other airlines are up to mark in terms to their safety parameters. And that's where this amendment will again give DGCA the added power to ensure that the airlines are following the guidelines or not.
Okay. Finally, Prince, you also mentioned the festive season when we spoke about IPL. This looks like it would be benefiting e-commerce, and we spoke a lot about this in the previous podcast as well. Does this mean that they will increase hiring, and how much are they expected to gain from this festive season?
There are already studies which say that the online sales this time would be higher than even last year's.
Uh-huh.
Which is interesting because till now, I think till about a month ago, there was hardly any spend happening apart for essentials.
Uh-huh.
But, and even though now unlock has happened and shops can open up and malls can open up, but the COVID infection numbers are still very high in India.
Right.
So people now are tending to buy online, not just essentials but non-essentials also. So that's the reason why e-commerce companies are expecting this year's sales to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are getting into the big festive season also. So there's Durga Puja, there's Diwali happening within a month or so. So it may very well happen that this time the online sales would be higher than last year. And so one is that online shopping is happening more. And second is, I think, even in the smaller second tier, third tier cities, more shopping will happen now online because of the same reason. People are reluctant to step outside.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see the previous year trends, most of the shops, these online sales numbers would be dominated by the metros or the tier one cities. But this time probably you would see the tier two, tier three city residents also, you know, buying in large numbers. And that will probably prop up their online sales numbers. So that's why many of these companies, the e-commerce companies, are also hiring very aggressively. So in fact, my company did a story about people who had lost their jobs, but now are getting hired as delivery persons by these e-commerce companies. And in October itself, at least 50,000 new jobs are being created. So which may increase again in November. So surely this year, I think online sales are going to be high.
Right. And Prince, would this apply to all sectors? Because I'm asking about like bigger goods. Would people buy that, like electronic appliances or furniture? Because there is still, you know, the scare of letting a delivery person inside the apartment or inside the house, right?
Yeah, there is. I agree. But especially when it comes to furniture and you need someone to assemble the furniture, the person has to come in and do that. But I think the relaxation has already happened, you know, in many of these societies that we live in. And even in my society, I have seen that people are, you know, ordering electronic goods online. In fact, just last week, my neighbor I saw had got a new TV. Delivered to his place. And I think even online players like and the furniture guys, people like Pepperfry or Urban Ladder, they also been talking about higher sales. And these companies, all these companies have been assuring a safety standards, you know. We've seen with the food delivery apps where they give the safety tags to restaurants because they say they have followed the safety instructions in terms of how they prepare the food. In similar ways, these companies also are taking steps to ensure the SOPs are followed and utmost care is taken. And given that it's a festival time, people would surely buy anything from, you know, the mobile phones to televisions to even clothes, because clothes are probably one, fashion was one segment where not much spending happened during these months.
Right.
But people would be, you know, looking forward to a reason to buy new clothes now, and the festival season is. The only reality check here would be the indication that we saw from Onam sales. You know, Onam sales weren't that great. And that was probably because in Kerala still a lot of restrictions had been in place because there was a resurgence in COVID infections. So many of the offline stores were not open, which meant that you know, white goods products didn't sell as much as last year. So we would need to see what happens when it comes to Durga Puja or Diwali, how things pan out. But right now it does look like, you know, there would be a good online shopping season this year.
Right, and it's really interesting that data shows that it may be better than last year, and we'll see how that happens.
Yes, surely.
Thank you so much, Prince, for all these details.
Welcome, Kirna.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of the Corporate Buzz Podcast. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay locked down to Money Control. Thank you for listening.